This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about cloud in calendar weeks 27 and 28. Frenes has built a sovereign cloud market radar for ICT providers, with weekly hot news, monthly reports, quarterly leadership presentations, and AI podcasts for field teams. You can find more info in the description.
So imagine realizing your cloud bill isn't, you know, based on a fixed subscription you bought last year, but instead it's based on what your software just decided to, like, think about overnight.
Yeah, welcome to the deep dive. If you're listening to this, you probably already know that the infrastructure underneath our entire digital world is undergoing, honestly, a seismic shift right now.
For sure. And today, our mission is really just to cut through all the noise for you. We're delivering the absolute top cloud trends we're seeing across LinkedIn, specifically for professionals in the ICT and tech industries.
Right. So we're going to look at how the AI token economy is just completely breaking traditional IT budgets. And then we'll get into why the definition of a sovereign cloud has suddenly become this massive geopolitical boardroom priority.
Yeah. And we'll wrap up by looking at how the physical deployment of all this new AI infrastructure is actually physically reshaping the European landscape. It's a lot to cover.
It is. Yeah. And I mean, you really can't talk about building all this new digital infrastructure until you look at how organizations are actually paying for it, right?
Yeah.
Because the billing models we've relied on for, what, a decade? They've fundamentally changed.
Oh, completely. There is a massive debate happening on LinkedIn right now between site reliability engineers and FinOps teams, because AI is basically forcing FinOps to become an absolute core enterprise discipline.
Exactly. Like Matt Baxter brought up a brilliant point recently. He said that engineering teams are still wrongly treating AI tokens like a predictable SaaS subscription.
Which is just such a dangerous mindset. I mean, treating AI tokens like a SaaS subscription is basically like trying to pay for your electricity with a flat rate Netflix plan.
Right.
It completely ignores the underlying mechanics, you know? You aren't paying for access anymore. You are paying for raw consumption. Tokens are just raw compute.
Yeah. And we are in this massive wave of token inflation right now. Like Baxter pointed out that Anthropic's Fable model currently costs twice as much as their Opus model.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then you look at Google. Their new deep thinking reasoning loops are spiking costs by like up to 6 times.
Wait, 6 times?
Yes, 6 times.
Yeah.
Let's actually unpack that for a second for you, because that isn't just a slight price increase. Like, why does a reasoning loop burn so much more compute?
Well, it really comes down to what the model is actually doing under the hood, right?
Yeah.
In a traditional query, you ask a question, the model generates an answer, and you pay for those specific input and output tokens. That's it.
Makes sense.
But a deep thinking reasoning loop, it operates totally differently. The AI queries itself, it iterates on its own logic, it tests hypotheses in the background, and it rejects bad answers before it finally shows you the actual result.
Okay, so all of that invisible background work just consumes massive amounts of raw compute.
Exactly. You're basically paying for the AI to talk to itself.
Which perfectly frames Priya Reddy's observation, I think.
Yeah.
She summarized it beautifully, noting that the next enterprise IT bill won't look anything like your standard cloud bill.
No, it won't.
It's going to look like a massive ledger of prompts, you know, dynamic retrieval processes, and autonomous agent actions that are just quietly adding up in the background.
Yeah, so managing those token costs isn't just this, like, administrative finance job anymore. If you manage an engineering budget today, this is becoming your core discipline.
And that leads to the obvious friction point, right? Mm. Like, how do you manage a cost that fluctuates wildly with every single user prompt?
Right. Well, Victor Garcia shared a really actionable solution for this exact problem on LinkedIn. He argues that we need to apply site reliability engineering, or SRE, principles directly to FinOps.
Oh, interesting. SRE for finance.
Yeah. His point is that we have to stop making engineers do manual tagging of cloud resources. We have to automate it. But more importantly, he says we need to treat a sudden budget spike exactly like a live system outage.
Okay, wait, let me stop you right there. How does that actually work in practice? Because, you know, an outage means the website is down, customers are locked out, the company is actively bleeding revenue.
Yeah, of course.
A budget spike just means the finance team gets a nasty surprise at the end of the month, right?
Yeah.
How do you treat those the exact same way?
It's about changing the culture of consequence, basically. Garcia is saying that if an AI agent goes rogue over the weekend and processes, say, 10,000 unnecessary retrieval loops, you don't just send an angry email on Monday.
Right.
You call the emergency brake. You do a blameless postmortem right then and there, just like you would if the database crashed. You gather the team, find the root cause in the prompt architecture, and fix it immediately so it never happens again.
I see. Okay, yeah, that level of urgency makes total sense when costs can literally multiply by 6 in a matter of hours.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because the cloud providers know this is a massive pain point.
Mm.
Jonah Mengel recently highlighted that AWS is actually trying to automate this exact investigative process.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have a new FinOps agent in preview right now. It uses natural language, so teams can just ask questions about cost anomalies. Like, they can say, why did my compute bill double yesterday? And they get immediate investigations and automated reports.
See, I'm going to push back on that a bit.
Yeah.
Isn't a natural language FinOps agent just like putting a shiny new AI dashboard over an old fundamentally broken forecasting problem?
That's a fair point.
Like, if my underlying architecture is unpredictable, having a chatbot politely explain to me that I blew my budget doesn't actually solve my problem, you know?
No, that is a highly valid pushback. And actually, academic research is backing you up on that exact point.
Yeah.
Jan C. Simons just published his master's thesis findings on this.
Oh, what did he find?
He discovered that while FinOps is maturing operationally, meaning, you know, teams have the dashboards, they know how to track where the money goes, it completely lacks strategic alignment with business goals.
Wow. So they just don't know why they're spending it.
Right. Most organizations are flying totally blind strategically. They know they spend $1 million on AI tokens, but they can't tell you if it actually moved the needle.
Which leads right into the truly uncomfortable question posed by Josh Squires on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
He asks, does any of this massive AI spend actually make human employees better at their jobs? And can we even measure that?
Yeah, that's the real question.
Because if you can't prove the value, you know, the fancy FinOps dashboard telling you where the money went doesn't matter at all. It's the ultimate reality check.
Exactly. If you can't measure the strategic value of a compute, the only concrete value you have is defensive.
Yes. And that transition perfectly explains our next major trend for this deep dive. Because AI compute is so incredibly strategic and wildly expensive, where that data physically lives and who controls it has escalated entirely.
Oh, for sure. It's no longer just a basic IT compliance checkbox.
Yeah.
It's a geopolitical boardroom priority.
Mm.
We are seeing digital sovereignty become a board-level design principle now.
Right. Wanda Matuszewska observed this shift really clearly. She pointed out that cloud dependency used to just be about avoiding vendor lock-in or maybe optimizing your long-term costs.
Right, the usual stuff.
But now, it has fundamentally shifted to geopolitical risk management.
But here's the problem with that, I think. The term sovereign cloud gets thrown around in so many marketing materials that it's kind of starting to lose its actual technical meaning.
Oh, 100%. It's a buzzword.
Yeah, but Alexander Walbridge broke it down brilliantly into three distinct definitions that, honestly, every tech leader listening to this needs to understand.
Let's go through them.
First, you have data residency. That just means where the server physically sits. Mm-hmm. So you put a data center in Frankfurt, you have data residency. Most global providers offer that.
Right. That's the easiest one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Second, you have data sovereignty. This dictates whose legal jurisdiction actually applies to that data. And third, you have operational sovereignty.
And what does that mean practically?
This means local citizens with local clearances are the ones controlling the systems, ensuring foreign engineers cannot access the underlying infrastructure.
Ah, got it. That legal jurisdiction piece, though, that is where the geopolitical tension really flares up. Like, in Europe, the U.S. Cloud Act is constantly brought up in these board-level discussions as this massive risk factor.
Well, yeah, it comes up all the time.
But Chris Suter argues that the Cloud Act is often just used as a scare tactic by local hardware vendors. He pointed out a really remarkable statistic on this.
What's that?
AWS has had zero disclosures of enterprise or government data stored outside the U.S. to the U.S. government.
Wait, really? Zero?
Zero. Suter basically calls the Cloud Act a theoretical risk, especially when you compare it to the actual daily threats of running on aging, vulnerable on-premises infrastructure, like we frequently see in the UK's National Health Service, for example.
I hear that argument. I do. But I have a very non-theoretical counterexample from Andreas Welch that kind of completely flips that logic.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the U.S. government recently ordered Anthropic to block foreign nationals from accessing its Fable 5 model, specifically citing national security concerns.
Wow, just like that.
Yes. Think about the precedent it sets. The hypothetical blocking of a foundational technology became a reality in, like, a single afternoon.
Yeah, that's huge.
If your entire enterprise tech stack relies on a model or infrastructure governed by a foreign provider, you are just incredibly exposed to a sudden geopolitical shift.
That is a fantastic point, actually, and I think it demands a really clear analogy. Relying strictly on data residency without operational sovereignty is, well, it's like renting a highly secure bank vault in your own city, right?
Okay, yeah.
But the bank manager who lives in another country can legally change the locks without telling you.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
You feel completely secure because the vault is just down the street,
yeah.
But you lack the ultimate control over the access.
I love that. And Paul Walker really drove this specific concept home on LinkedIn recently. He argues that true cloud sovereignty isn't about the physical metal of the server at all.
Right. What is it about?
It is defined entirely by identity governance. The identity control plane, you know, your Active Directory or your identity and access management system, is the system that decides who gets to see what.
Exactly.
So if that identity control plane runs on infrastructure you don't operate, you've basically locked all the doors to your bank vault, but you handed someone else the master key.
Which brings us to a really uncomfortable juncture for the European tech industry, honestly, because if operational control and identity governance are the master keys, how do tech leaders actually measure this control?
Right.
And maybe more importantly, can the native European cloud providers even build the locks?
Well, let's talk about how the EU is trying to measure this first. Tom Popemans and Mark Axnich highlighted the EU's SEAL framework.
What's the SEAL framework?
It's a standardized benchmarking tool to measure cloud sovereignty. It scores providers on a scale from 0 to 4.
Oh.
A score of 0 means absolutely no sovereignty. You're essentially relying on a foreign public cloud with no local controls. A score of 4 means full EU control, where the infrastructure, operations, and legal jurisdiction are entirely localized.
So it's designed to give enterprise buyers a real quantifiable metric rather than just relying on, like, marketing jargon.
Exactly.
I mean, it is a great framework in theory, but when you look closely at the software layer, it exposes a pretty stark reality. Federer Companiet's recently published some really eye-opening research on what he calls the EU cloud managed services gap.
Oh yeah, I saw this.
Yeah, when you look past the raw compute and actually look at the software services that developers actually use on a daily basis, the numbers are highly revealing. AWS offers over 200 managed services.
Okay.
If you look at the deepest EU native catalog, which is currently OVH Cloud, they have just 45. And Hetzner sits at around 8.
Wow, just 8. Let's pause and explain why that matters to you if you are listening and maybe might not be a developer. The massive gap isn't in basic storage or raw processing power.
No, not at all.
The gap is in the higher level abstractions. We're talking about things like advanced observability pipelines, managed serverless databases, or machine learning orchestration.
Right. These are the tools that allow developers to deploy code quickly without having to manually build and maintain the underlying database architecture.
Exactly. So if you don't have those managed services, your engineering team just has to build them from scratch, which takes thousands of hours.
Yeah.
So here's my question then. If European providers are missing over 150 of these crucial managed services, aren't enterprises just going to look at their SEAL score, shrug, and default right back to the global hyperscalers out of pure convenience?
Probably.
I mean, speed to market usually wins out over compliance ideals, right?
It does. And that convenience is exactly what creates the risk here. Harry Mylonas actually calls this the $1 billion sovereign compliance trap.
Oof. A billion-dollar trap.
Yeah. He points out that AWS recently announced a massive initiative to deploy their own forward-deployed engineers directly into enterprise IT departments, basically to help them build agentic AI solutions.
Okay.
Mylonas warns that the hyperscalers are brilliantly shifting the lock-in vector here.
Wait, shifting the lock-in vector how? What do you mean?
Well, historically, providers locked you in by trapping your data, right? It was just way too expensive to move petabytes of data out of their cloud.
Right, the egress fees were insane.
Exactly. But now, by sending engineers to build your AI agents using their 200 proprietary managed services, they are permanently weaving your core business processes directly into their specific ecosystem. It's not data lock-in anymore. It's logic and process lock-in.
Wow. So they write the proprietary code that just binds your business operations to their infrastructure?
Yep.
If you ever try to leave for a sovereign alternative, your entire automated workforce just breaks.
Completely breaks.
That is a brilliant and truly terrifying strategy. But, you know, despite these massive software capability gaps, we are actually seeing the physical deployment of sovereign AI hardware accelerating at an unprecedented rate right now.
Oh, absolutely. This is really where the geopolitical strategy meets the physical supply chain. Like Hamers and Honda Groot just announced the deployment of the Netherlands' first truly sovereign AI cloud.
Yeah, this is huge.
It's a massive collaboration. It's between Volelt, Dell, North Sea data centers, and it's powered entirely by NVIDIA B300 GPUs. They are launching the first phase in Amsterdam this October.
Okay, but the truly staggering part of this announcement is their expansion plan, right?
Oh, for sure.
They are laying the groundwork for a 250,000 GPU AI gigafactory in Rotterdam.
250,000 GPUs. We have to put that scale into perspective for you. The power and cooling requirements for 250,000 advanced AI chips running simultaneously, that's comparable to the energy demands of a small city.
Yeah, you can't just plug that into a standard local grid. And this isn't even an isolated event. Trisha Vengala shared another massive deployment example. PolyCloud just secured a 580 million euro deal to deploy 280 waterless-cooled micro data center units across 5 different European countries.
Wow.
Yeah, they're bringing 29,000 GPUs online.
And we really should explain why that waterless-cooled detail is so critical there. Traditional data center air conditioning completely fails when you pack that many dense GPUs into a tight space. They just run way too hot.
Right, you need advanced liquid cooling just to keep the silicon from melting.
Exactly. What PolyCloud is doing is highly strategic here. They are deploying these high-density micro units directly at the site of renewable energy farms, specifically to solve the power grid bottleneck. We are watching a massive physical footprint expanding across the continent right now.
It's incredible to watch. And we really have to remember that this physical expansion isn't just a commercial enterprise trend driven by, you know, ChatGPT rappers or whatever.
Yeah.
This is a defense mandate. Ralph Gadul published a study recently showing that a staggering 72% of European aerospace and defense cloud usage currently relies on U.S. hyperscalers.
That's a massive vulnerability.
It is. Yep. If you were building next-generation military tech, relying on foreign infrastructure is just an unacceptable vulnerability.
Which is exactly why we are seeing highly targeted initiatives emerge to capture that specific market. Tobias Demmel highlighted Oracle's new defense ecosystem, for instance.
What's that about?
It's specifically designed to accelerate secure, completely local deployment paths for military tech and defense contractors in Europe.
It makes sense. It requires a complete architectural shift, though. Like, James Warnett made a great observation comparing two different sovereign deployments, Sharon AI in Australia and the CSCS Supercomputing Center in Switzerland.
Okay, what did he find?
He pointed out that when you were dealing with defense or highly sensitive corporate research, the overarching architectural challenge isn't just about standing up raw compute anymore. The hardest questions now sit squarely at the data layer.
Let's expand on that a bit, actually. When you have a massive GPU cluster, you rarely have just one entity using it, right?
Exactly.
You have multiple tenants, different departments, different contractors, all sharing the exact same physical silicon.
Right.
The architectural nightmare is ensuring high-speed data feeding into those GPUs while maintaining incredibly strict encryption and isolation. So tenant A's AI model cannot accidentally ingest tenant B's classified data.
That would be a disaster.
Yeah. Raw compute without rigorously governed data is essentially useless for sensitive workloads.
Which transitions us perfectly into our final theme for today. You have the massive gigafactories, you have the advanced data layers. But deploying all these secure sovereign GPUs is really only half the battle.
Yep.
Once the infrastructure is live and humming, how do you actually govern the autonomous AI agents running on top of it?
And this is exactly where the industry is really struggling right now. We aren't talking about simple scripts that automate a spreadsheet anymore. We are talking about autonomous agents making complex, multi-step decisions.
Right.
Vicky Makija argues that regulated modernization, you know, bringing legacy industries like banking or healthcare into the AI age, it actually stalls on governance, not on agentic AI capabilities.
I see.
The cloud can be incredibly fast, but regulatory audit trails and risk sign-offs are painfully slow. She points out that you need incredibly clean boundaries between what an AI agent can decide on its own and what a human must explicitly approve.
And the underlying security architecture have to evolve drastically just to support those boundaries. David Linthicum outlined three crucial security shifts that tech leaders, well, they just can no longer ignore them.
Okay, what are they?
First, zero trust has to be the absolute baseline. It's not an afterthought you bolt on later.
Right.
Second, Organizations must start implementing quantum-safe cryptography right now because data intercepted today could easily be decrypted by quantum computers tomorrow.
Oh, that's a scary thought. Yeah.
And third, there is an urgent need to protect what he calls non-human identities.
See, that third point is fascinating to me. A non-human identity is essentially the digital credential given to the autonomous AI agent acting as your digital workforce.
Yeah.
Think about it. If an agent spins up, pulls financial data, makes a purchasing decision, and then just spins down in 3 seconds, how do you authenticate it?
Exactly.
These digital workers need their own dynamic, strictly governed access policies.
And the platform vendors are scrambling to build those governance tools right now. Chris Wolf detailed how VMware Cloud Foundation is evolving specifically for this reason.
Oh, what are they doing?
They are building in centralized policy enforcement to provide end-to-end audit trails for agentic actions. And building an audit trail for an AI is incredibly difficult.
I can imagine.
It's not just logging a human clicking a button. It's logging the entire dynamic retrieval path and the probabilistic logic the agent used to reach its decision.
Yeah, because if you can't prove to a compliance auditor exactly what an agent did, and more importantly, why it did it, you just cannot legally deploy it in a regulated enterprise.
Yeah.
That traceability is the absolute foundation of trust in this new era. I mean, if we connect everything we've discussed today, from the shifting token economics of FinOps to the geopolitical drive for sovereign data centers, all the way to the governance of agentic AI, we are looking at an incredibly complex, highly regulated future.
We really are.
The days of moving fast and breaking things in the cloud are completely over. Visibility and control are now just as critical as speed and innovation.
Which brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with as we wrap up this deep dive. We are rushing at breakneck speed to build these massive sovereign AI gigafactories across the globe, right?
Yeah.
But imagine this scenario for a second. If a fully autonomous AI agent running inside a perfectly sovereign, completely disconnected environment hallucinates and makes a multi-million euro mistake.
Yeah.
Who exactly holds the liability?
Oof, that is the question.
Is it the creator of the original AI model? Is it the sovereign cloud host providing the isolated infrastructure? Or does the liability fall on the digital agent itself and the team that gave it the prompt? It is a very murky landscape, and honestly, the rules haven't been written yet.
No, they haven't.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on ICT and tech, digital products and services, artificial intelligence, sustainability and green ICT, defense tech, and health.
Thanks so much for joining us and exploring these shifts with us today. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.